Listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. In today's show, Egypt teams up with Western-backed Libyan forces to strike Islamic State targets in Libya. Fighting around a Ukrainian government-controlled town jeopardizes a new ceasefire deal. And Denmark's leader speaks out about the weekend terror attacks in her country's capital. I'm Michael Lippin. Egypt has carried out a second round of airstrikes on Islamic State targets in eastern Libya in retaliation for the group's massacre of 21 Egyptian Coptic Christians in the country. The Islamic State revealed the massacre in a video published on the internet on Sunday. Libyan authorities said Monday's Egyptian airstrikes killed dozens of militants and several civilians in the Islamic State stronghold of Darna. They said warplanes of Libya's eastern-based and western-backed government joined the Egyptian airstrikes, targeting militant weapons caches and training camps. The rival Libyan government based in the capital Tripoli, which is supported by some Islamist groups, denounced the airstrikes as a violation of Libyan sovereignty. Heather Murdoch has more from Cairo on the aftermath of the videotaped massacre.
In the video, 21 Egyptian Christians appeared to be slaughtered on a beach by Islamic State militants.
إن مصر تحتفظ لنفسها بحق الرد وبالأسلوب والتوقيت.
After the video was released, Egyptian President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi promised to hit back, saying Egypt has the right to retaliate when and how it chooses. But Ziad A. Akel, a senior researcher also at Al-Ahram Center, says the airstrikes could signal that Egypt's policy against Islamic State might be changing. In the past, he says, Egypt has supported the Libyan military mainly with training and capacity building.
I don't think that they will continue in that manner. I think that Egypt is about to rethink the pattern of its involvement within Libya. The real policy change, I think, is coming on the way.
The shift, he adds, is unlikely to mean Egyptian troops on the ground. Heather Murdoch, VOA News, Cairo.
A day-old ceasefire in eastern Ukraine appeared to be on the verge of collapse Monday as pro-Russian separatists and Ukrainian government forces exchanged artillery fire in the town of Debaltseve. Rebels who have surrounded Ukrainian troops in the rail hub offered them a safe exit if they lay down their arms. But Ukraine's government rejected the idea and said Debaltseve lies within its territory under the truce negotiated last week by President Petro Poroshenko with the leaders of France, Russia, and Germany. The U.S. State Department said it is gravely concerned by the deteriorating situation in and around Debaltseve. It called on Russia and the separatists that it backs to stop all attacks immediately and engage with monitors of the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe to facilitate the ceasefire. Eurozone ministers have given Greece an ultimatum to request an extension for its debt bailout program despite Athens' strong objections. Eurogroup chairman Jeroen Dijsselbloem, who is also the Dutch finance minister, said after inconclusive talks in Brussels that Greece had the rest of this week to come into line. The Greek government has so far rejected that option, arguing that the conditions attached to the bailout package have plunged Greece into poverty. If Athens does decide to request an extension as demanded by the Eurozone, the Eurozone finance ministers could meet again this Friday to discuss options to ease some terms of the program for Greece. Another possibility is that Greece could be forced out of the Eurozone. Danish Prime Minister Helle Thorning-Schmidt has said there is no indication that the gunman who killed two people in attacks on a Copenhagen free speech event and a synagogue was part of a terrorist cell. Speaking Monday, she said the 22-year-old gunman who was born in Denmark is someone that was known to police for several criminal acts and gang connections. Danish authorities have not named the gunman officially, but several Danish news agencies have identified him as Omar Abdel Hamid El Hussein. The Danish intelligence chief said investigators believe the gunman was inspired by Islamic radicalism. But Ms. Thorning-Schmidt said the two shootings were not a conflict between Muslims and non-Muslims.
This is a conflict between the core values of our society and violent extremists.
Danish police have jailed two people suspected of helping the assailant in the Copenhagen shootings. The attacks have drawn condemnation across Europe, and the suspect has a similar profile to the men who carried out recent attacks in Paris that killed 17 people. Lisa Bryant reports from the French capital.
Paris Mayor Anne Hidalgo traveled to Copenhagen to express her solidarity with the city and its people. She and the city's mayor, Frank Jensen, vowed to defend free speech and democracy. Danish media have identified the suspected gunman in the Copenhagen attacks as 22-year-old Omar Abdelhamid El Hussein. Police shot him dead early Sunday outside an apartment building after he opened fire. Like the Paris shooters, El Hussein comes from a Muslim family and he has a prison record. Danish security services say he may have been inspired by the Paris attacks. The targets for the Copenhagen attacks were similar to those in Paris, where gunmen attacked a satirical magazine and a kosher supermarket. The response has also been similar. Danish police have been out in force following the attack. In Paris, more than 10,000 soldiers continue to guard sensitive places. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
The European Union has agreed to give Zimbabwe around $270 million in the first direct aid to President Robert Mugabe's government since the EU bloc imposed sanctions in 2002. The aid package unveiled on Monday in Harare will fund Zimbabwean healthcare, agriculture, and good governance projects over the next 6 years. For years, the EU has funneled aid to Zimbabwe through third-party groups because of documented corruption and human rights abuses by Mugabe officials and allies. But following pressure from African nations, the EU has gradually lifted travel and financial restrictions on some Zimbabwean officials. The Nigerian army says a town in Borno State seized by Boko Haram Islamist insurgents last month has been recaptured. The army said on its Twitter feed Monday that military operations to clear terrorists from Monguno and other communities were successful. And here in the U.S., a grand jury has charged a man in connection with the shooting deaths of three Muslim university students in the eastern U.S. state of North Carolina. Local media reported that 42-year-old Craig Hicks is facing three counts of first-degree murder in the deaths of Dea Barakat, his wife Yusr Abu Salha, and her sister Razan Abu Salha. Hicks was a neighbor of the three near the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. The shooting has sparked cries of religious injustice in the U.S. and abroad, but police have said they have not uncovered evidence that Hicks acted out of hatred for his neighbor's faith. Well, that's it for International Edition on The Voice of America. I'm Michael Lippin.
This is Business News on VOA Global. I'm Jim Stevenson. Today is a holiday in the United States, President's Day, and that means markets are closed. Elsewhere, Robin Hayes is the new CEO of JetBlue Airways and is balancing between passengers and Wall Street. As he is taking control of the New York-based airline, Hayes faces a difficult task, that is to increase profits without destroying the culture that has made JetBlue stand out from other U.S. airlines. JetBlue, after all, was the first carrier to give passengers free live TV at each seat and is still known for its friendly employees. And for years, the airline has resisted charging for a first checked bag and also boasted the most generous legroom in the industry. But while the airline remained profitable, it did lag behind competitors, and Wall Street has demanded change. To appease investors, Hayes recently announced that JetBlue will be adding a fee this spring for the first checked suitcase, a move estimated to bring in an extra $200 million annually by 2017. The carrier also expects to add 15 more seats on most of its jets. A meeting of Eurozone finance ministers to discuss Greece's financial bailout has broken down amid signs the discussions ended in discord. Hopes for a deal at Monday's meeting took a hit after some finance ministers, including the one from Germany, raised concerns over the new Greek government's negotiating tactics and demands. The gathering broke up after Greece rejected what it says was an irrational and unacceptable demand from its Euro partners at the start of the discussions in Brussels. A Greek government official who spoke only on the condition of anonymity said the proposals were a radical departure from what was previously discussed. The official did not elaborate on the details. That's a look at business news on VOA Global. This is VOA Global. I'm Jim Stevenson at the Voice of America headquarters in Washington, D.C. Imagine getting into your car and you're getting ready to go to your destination, and all you do is sit back and the car drives. That sounds pretty cool. At one time, it sounded like science fiction. It's becoming reality, and rapidly. David Byrd will tell us more on his Now segment. But first, we've got the tale of twins. Ira Melman and the American Cafe is next.
I'm Ira Melman in the American Cafe. Joan Friedman understands why being a twin can often be a blessing and a curse at the same time. The psychotherapist who specializes in twins issues is a twin herself and the mother of fraternal twins. In this story, narrated by Faith Lapidus, Faiza Al-Masri tells us more on the challenges of being a twin.
When Joan Friedman and her identical twin sister Jane were growing up half a century ago, there were few twins around.
We were very much stars and got a lot of attention, and people always knew we were the Friedman twins. But then as we became older and you wanted to have your own identity, people really didn't know who we were. And it was a sense of sort of like being noticed but not being known.
Like many twins back then and even today, Joan and Jane dressed alike and were always together.
The first time Jane and I were separated was when we went to college. And it was an incredibly difficult adjustment. All of a sudden, you find yourself sort of as a very unprepared singleton.
Due to advancements in infertility treatments, Friedman says, the number of twins has grown.
Today, I think the latest statistics show that one out of every 33 births is a twin birth. And I think like in 1980s, it was one out of 90 births.
And she says, twins are often still treated as two halves of a whole rather than as separate individuals.
We've been around each other for our entire lives and, you know, we're trying to separate.
22-year-old Nazi Farkandeh and her twin sister Rana have always been inseparable best friends.
The funnest part is probably just always having a companion that you can count on. The most challenging part is just feeling that everything is kind of a shared experience when you want to have your own experience.
Farkandeh also says people perceive twins as the same person, while in fact they are very different.
Our styles are completely different. She's more of a, you know, girly girl. She likes to do her makeup. She likes to do her hair when she goes out. I'm more casual. I don't really wear any makeup, and I never do my hair. I'm more into, like, literature, and she's more into music. And even growing up, I was always a little bit more outgoing, and she was a shyer one.
Like most siblings, twins often disagree with one another.
It's really funny. It's that there's actually like a huge irony in disagreeing with your twin, because on one hand, you appreciate it because it's the way that you differentiate yourself from them. But on the other hand, it's just kind of more irritating because like somebody who's really, really, really close to you disagreeing with you. So in that sense, it kind of burns more.
Twin boys process their differences differently than twin girls, says psychotherapist Joan Friedman.
Identical twin girls have the closest relationships just because girls tend to need and find, you know, more intimacy with one another. Identical twin girls really do try to keep the competition under wraps, whereas boys will be able to express their feelings or their hostility in a more open way.
In her new book, The Same But Different, How Twins Can Live, Love, and Learn to Be Individuals, Friedman offers this advice for raising independent twins.
I have certain things that I always tell parents, which is, of course, not to dress them alike and not to give them alliterative names like, you know, Tom and Tony and Natalie and Nancy, but to give them different names. Make sure you take separate pictures of each twin. If they grow up and never see a picture of themselves by themselves, it's very difficult for them to think about them as separate.
Reinforcing different personalities and nurturing different temperaments, Joan Friedman says, is key to raising happy, close twins who have their own individual goals and paths in life. For writer Faiza Al-Masri, I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
I'm Ira Melman in the American Cafe. Your invitation is out. Every day you can hear this program and join us in the cafe at voanews.com and on many podcast platforms.
What's Hi, everyone. I'm David Byrd, and here is what's happening now. Driverless cars have been in development for the past several years. Here in the United States, Google has been leading the way, but authorities in Britain have launched their first official trials of driverless cars near London's O2 Arena. The vehicles will also be tested at Milton Keynes, Coventry, and Bristol. One model being tried out is a shuttle developed by Transport Research Laboratory. Dr. Nick Reed is one of the company's researchers.
Safety is paramount in our research, and the vehicle is detecting moving objects around it. And if there are pedestrians moving into its path, it will slow down. If they continue into its path, it comes to a safe stop.
The shuttle looks somewhat like a cross between a golf cart and a subway car. It has no windows, and Reed says that passengers determine its course by punching destinations into a touchscreen.
To use the shuttle, the user will touch the screen and then select the destination, and pressing start, the vehicle would safely, quietly, and effectively move off, detecting any hazards around it, and take us to our chosen destination.
Another model being tried out is the two-person Lutz Pathfinder, a pod vehicle produced by RDM Group. It includes 19 sensors, cameras, radar, and laser technology to help it navigate. Jez Coates is one of the project's engineers.
There's a lot of technology in this vehicle. Not only is the vehicle itself advanced because it's an all-electric vehicle, it also has four-wheel steering and it has a suspension system. So it has all the systems of your everyday road car, plus it has all the technology necessary to make it move autonomously. It's a fantastically complicated, very highly packaged, tiny vehicle.
The British government has provided $29 million to help get the projects off the ground. British Transport Minister Claire Perry says that safety is a top priority.
Right now, 93% of accidents are caused by driver error. I'm a keen cyclist. That awful feeling when you go past a car and you're not sure if they can see you. With these cameras, obviously the vehicle is better equipped, if you like, to drive more with greater safety.
British Business Secretary Vince Cable says that the projects could also pay economic dividends.
You know, within a couple of years, Milton Keynes is already expecting a system to be up and running. These pilots themselves are actually quite advanced. I mean, here in Greenwich, the vehicle will be running through a residential area. If the technology is proven and it is safe and it meets the regulatory requirements, the potential for the British industry is very substantial indeed.
Consumer wariness about driverless cars is one of the biggest hurdles that will have to be overcome. Even some of the folks at the rollout near the O2 were skeptical that driverless cars would be something they would like.
It's amazing. I was a bit shocked. I was a bit confused there was no one driving it.
Want to see what happens when you stand in front of it?
I don't think I could trust a computer that much for human instinct.
And, of course, there's always the prejudice to be overcome that people just like sitting behind the wheel and feeling like they're controlling their automobile. Research undertaken by Virgin last year found that slightly less than half of the respondents said they would not feel comfortable with driverless cars on the road. And, of course, there's also insurance and Britain's highway code that need to be updated to allow driverless cars. David Williams is a car insurance expert.
Currently, whoever's driving the car or driving cars are responsible for the accident. But, you know, going forward, what's it going to be? Is it going to be the manufacturer of the vehicle? Is it going to be the person who programmed the software?
Some of the benefits of driverless cars include zero emissions, reduced congestion, and allowing motorists to do other things with the time that they would normally spend driving. So what about you? Would you ride in a driverless car? Do you think that they will help the environment or reduce congestion? Let us know what you think by logging on to our Facebook page, VOA Asia. And you can email us your thoughts at voaasia@voanews.com. And that's what's happening now. Until next time, I'm David Byrd.
Archaeologists in southern Greece have discovered the grave of a man and a woman buried as they had died some 5,800 years ago, still tightly embracing. A senior member of the excavation team says the discovery, which was made back in 2013 and publicized just this week after DNA testing determined each skeleton's sex, is the oldest of its kind in Greece. She says the couple most likely died holding each other. It's time for sports on VOA Global. I'm Jim Stevenson. The NBA All-Star Game was held in New York on Sunday. Russell Westbrook turned out to be the big star, scoring 41 points, just one shy of the All-Star record as the Western Conference beat the East 163-158 late Sunday in the highest scoring All-Star game ever. The Oklahoma City speedster had a record 27 points by halftime and closed out the scoring with two free throws, falling 1 point shy of Wilt Chamberlain's 42 points. That happened all the way back in the 1962 game. Of course, Westbrook was voted the game's most valuable player at Madison Square Garden. An arbitration panel ordered Lance Armstrong and Tailwind Sports Corporation to pay $10 million in a fraud dispute with a promotions company for what it called an unparalleled pageant of international perjury, fraud, and conspiracy that covered up the use of his performance-enhancing drugs. Dallas-based SEA Promotions announced the 2-1 decision against the former cyclist when its lawyers said Monday they had asked Texas's 116th Civil District Court in Dallas to confirm the arbitration ruling that was dated February 4th. SCA paid Armstrong and Tailwind, the since-dissolved team management company, about $12 million in bonuses during Armstrong's career. That's when he won 7 Tour de France titles. Those victories were later stripped after Armstrong and his U.S. Postal Service teams were found to have used banned performance-enhancing drugs. Well, just about every major tennis tournament has its own records and titles. And, well, here's a new one for the Memphis Open. They had all the big names, from Bjorn Borg to Jimmy Connors and John McEnroe, Pete Sampras, Michael Chang, Andy Roddick. They're all on the list of past champions. Now, Kai Nishikori of Japan stands alone as Memphis's first three-peat champion. Nishikori became the first man to win three straight Memphis Open titles as he beat South African Kevin Anderson 6-4, 6-4 in the final late Sunday. Nishikori improved to 13-1 at the indoor tournament. So look at sports on VOA Global. Natalie LaRose seems to be shaping up to be the first breakout artist of 2015. The Dutch diva's Jeremiah-assisted debut single, Somebody, is exploding at rhythmic radio and steadily climbing up the Billboard Hot 100. It reached a new peak of number 59 just this week. Florida's protege now drops a new video. It's a cute and colorful escapade that pays tribute to its 1980s source material, that is, Whitney Houston and her iconic I Want to Dance with Somebody. Let's listen to Natalie LaRose featuring Jeremiah with Somebody.
Just what I wanna do.
know just what I wanna do. I wanna rock with somebody. Yeah. I wanna take shots with somebody.
Shots, 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 shots.
I wanna lead with somebody.
Come on, come on.
And we ain't gotta tell nobody. We ain't gotta tell nobody.
Nobody,
yeah. In the club like what? We be in the party in the club like what? In the club like. We be in your city going dumb like what? In the club like what? We be in the party in the club like what? Yeah, we be in your city going dumb like what? We be in the party in the club like what? And at the end of the night when the lights go out, will we turn down? Oh no, we won't.
We ain't never turned down. We ain't never turned down.
And when they try to make us leave, we turn and say we never going home. And you know just what I wanna do.
Natalie LaRose featuring Jeremiah with Somebody, and yes, hearkening back to those days when the late Whitney Houston was rocking in the 1980s with I Wanna Dance With Somebody. Many of us remember that when it came out. Well, in her new video, the 25-year-old Natalie LaRose is rocking a variety of pasteled color outfits, and she's showing off her best retro dance moves. A lot of fun to watch. She's also hugging a glow-in-the-dark teddy bear. Well, something else to check out the video for. And also Jeremiah is in the video, the Don't Tell Him hitmaker, a welcome cameo as he's flirting with Natalie LaRose. Apparently a cute visual for the breezy bop, which interpolates Whitney Houston's classic anthem. It's a fresh and modern version of it, and thanks to Idolater.com for the latest news on Natalie LaRose, and we got to hear her song moving up the charts on the Billboard Hot 100, reaching a peak of number 59 this week. And who knows, she could be shaping up to be that first breakout artist of 2015. That's music on VOA Global from the Voice of America. Well, when people used to settle arguments back in the day, and I mean way back in the day, often if they couldn't come to an agreement, they would go to a duel where they each had a pistol, went back to back with each other, walked a few paces, turned and shot, and well, if somebody was killed, that's the way it ended. We don't do that much anymore, but there is still a law on the books in Idaho. The House Judiciary Rules and Administration Committee voted on Friday to consider ridding Idaho of the rule on jurisdiction for out-of-state duels. The law passed during Idaho's very first territorial legislature back in the year of 1864. Currently, the law states that Idaho has jurisdiction if a person dies in the Gem State after getting injured in a duel out of state. Michael Kane from the Idaho Sheriff's Association has been tasked with finding outdated laws and repeal them from the Idaho Code. He says, needless to say, this is obsolete, as he told lawmakers, although one Republican joked that some lawmakers may want to take advantage of the statute before its repeal takes effect in July. I don't know about that. The rule has been untouched for most of its tenure. It was amended back in 1986 as part of a larger change to grant jurisdiction to the entire state rather than a specific county. The bill has its roots in an 1804 duel between former Vice President Aaron Burr and former Treasury Secretary Alexander Hamilton. Wow, that's a long time ago. Well, that brings our show to an end. We thank everybody who has helped us out. Tracy Carter is our director, Zubir Osman our engineer, Diane Gao our managing editor, and getting a remedial course in directing. And we thank you for joining us today. We hope you stop back by again tomorrow for another edition of VOA Global. I'm Jim Stevenson.